Hey, we need your support to keep the podcasts flowing. Go to explorationsearlylearning.com/support to learn how. One of the big things you can do is shop Amazon with the link we provide. You buy your cat food, you buy your kids' books, you buy whatever it is you buy on Amazon, you pay the regular price. We get a small percentage of it. Everybody wins. A lot of people are doing it. It really supports the shows, and we really appreciate it. Give it a try. Thanks.
Welcome to the Child Care Bar and Grill Podcast. Jeff Johnson coming to you live from upstairs studio. In studio, Lisa Murphy.
Hello.
Tasha Johnson.
Aloha.
And we're back with part two on structure versus control. I gotta tell a story of my evolution.
Oh, you mean from before you knew better and then where you are now?
Yeah, well, I thought I knew everything, but yeah. When our kids were small, our son Tyler, he was pretty easy with lots of, I mean, he was just an easy kid. His sister Zoe, if he'd been a challenge, she probably wouldn't have been born. But then Tasha said, put a baby in me, and I said, all
okay.
Right. And
I got nothing else to do today.
Cleared my skin. I mean, what's 4 or 5 minutes?
I know, I'm sorry, three.
Yeah. And so, but Zoe was.
Life was never dull.
We butted heads frequently, and we got into a lot of power struggles, and I needed control in some situations, and just thinking about food, I had battles with her. With eating, and I never won.
Of course not.
Of course not. But I'm
because you can't make anybody do anything.
Exactly.
But you don't learn that until after you realize
until
you
can't give up trying to make people do things. And by the time she was a little bit older, I kind of got the hang of it and had given up a little bit. And we were more able to give her a little bit of power and control, and grandbaby is her mother.
Oh,
except
yes.
Grandbaby is her mother who had her mother as a mother, which I'm loving watching her parents struggle with her eating stuff now. And so when she was here visiting, she subsisted on olives and blueberries and noodles and rice and
sticky rice and
eggs and
didn't die
and we didn't have any battles and life was so much easier. And the last episode we talked about how control is exhausting and that got me started thinking about this and it really was. And our relationship with Rowan is probably better than it was with her mommy
but
at that age.
But that's cliche-ish. The cliche is that the grandparents, you've learned.
Yeah, yeah.
So you know how to pick the battles. You know this is not the hill I'm going to die on. And so sometimes the relationship with the grandchildren is like penance for maybe all the shit you did, quote unquote, wrong or before you knew better, maybe with your own.
Yeah, and the other thing here is, I mean, Zoe turned out all right. And so we...
Eating nothing
but
peanut butter and...
Yeah, and in spite of all of the battles we had, and, I mean, kids are incredibly resilient, and so if you do have a history of needing to be in control, kids are going to turn out... I mean, kids turn out fine most of the time.
And they're quite forgiving.
Yeah, and incredibly resilient. And that said, if you're looking at making a transition or you have coworkers who get to the point where they've kind of observed you long enough that they're ready to kind of maybe because they've kind of watched you, that they're maybe ready to take a baby step from being controlling to being more attentive to structure. I thought maybe in this episode we could kind of dig in to that transition process and maybe throw around some ideas and maybe tips for making that step on the journey.
So many of you have heard that when I first started teaching, I was paired up with the infamous poopy face woman with 49 rules on the wall and her whistle and her timer and her stopwatch and her masking tape lineup line. And oh yeah, it was horrible. But she was going to be my mentor, according to the director. And and she was very, very controlling. And I mean, like a control freak. And the stuff only came out of the cupboard when she was in a good mood. And, you know, anyway, she was the boss of everything. I mean, that's really...
Was she a super freak?
Super freak, super freaky. She might have been. I don't know. I had heard she's still teaching, but then I did the math on that. I'm like, she was old when I was with her, so I doubt it. But anyway, the control piece was that, I mean, she, no exaggeration. I mean, sometimes I think people listen to me say this stuff and think, oh, well, we've padded this. No, we had a rectangle table in the classroom. There were 12 children in the classroom. She had 6 activities on each side, and she would place all of the children. This was called manipulative time, by the way, in the morning. And now, looking back, hindsight 2010,
very manipulative.
Who was manipulating who, right? This was not fine motor, like manipulatives. Well, it was, but I think it, anyway. So she would tell you where to sit, and you had 2 minutes with the thing that she had set out there, and then she would say switch, and the kids all got up.
Did she have a stopwatch?
And so she did, and the kids would switch, and you had 2 minutes to interact with this fine motor thing so she could check off and say that we did 30 minutes of fine motor manipulative work. That's controlling.
Yes.
That's incredibly controlling.
She had a whistle, and she would blow it to line up on the yard, and kids that weren't even in the class anymore would come running because they're like, oh, my God. And they're like, oh, my God, wait, I'm not with her anymore. And they would just had to be the boss of absolutely everything. So then, without boring you, oh, you're saying time out? Okay.
Can we do a role play?
No.
No, listen to the scenario. You're the poopy face lady.
Why did
and she I hid your whistle.
How did you get it off of her neck?
Yeah, exactly. How would not have ever gotten it off of her neck?
You wouldn't have been allowed in her personal space to it.
I brought scissors.
No, you know what you would do is you would have found a whistle over the weekend and just brought your own damn ass whistle in on a Monday. And I'm like, where's that whistle coming from? And then I would chase you around the room like a maniac trying to get your whistle because...
He would have brought like at least 3 to have his cohorts.
Right.
I would swallow it. And then every time I farted or burped, it would whistle. Because that's the way it works in the cartoons.
It got stuck in your throat and you just wheeze the rest of the day.
What ended up happening, we don't need to role play that. People, I think they get it. So Cindy then showed up. So many of the listeners have heard this story, but then Cindy showed up. She became my real mentor, and she said, because I'm standing there. I was blowing the whistle. I was lining them up, and nobody was going outside till I got a straight line, and you're going to wait here all day. And Cindy actually said to me, what are you waiting for? And incidentally, today is Miss Cindy's birthday. Aww. And so Miss Cindy, and she said, what are you waiting for? And I'm like, well, duh, I'm waiting for them to line up so we can go outside. And she very calmly, because she was further down the path at this point, she goes, why don't you just open the door and let them go?
Whoa.
Right? And it's like, mind explodes. And I was like, huh. But I stood there for 6 minutes because I don't know who the hell you are. And we got to clearly get these kids ready for kindergarten, their hands on top of their head, marching around the room like a bunch of prisoners. And that was my first step towards breaking up with that control. That quite honestly, probably in the heat of the moment, I wasn't aware that I had become controlling. I was just, it's like fishbowl, like or proximity. I don't know what the language is.
But I was your mentor.
I was in this environment with this woman who was modeling this behavior, even though it was 180 degrees different than what I had been taught and what I had experienced, but it was like, this is now what you do. And so I started doing it. until Cindy said, well, why are you doing that? And so the whole point of this 10-minute digression is that I think the, dare I say, easiest way to start this kind of process is to ask, what is the worst possible thing that's going to happen if That question helped me change my mind. That question is why I started to change my mind. Why you got that smirk on your face?
Did you ever wonder if maybe Poopy Face was running the long con on you and she was, in fact, being a mentor? She was faking the whole thing so that you'd get to that point where you'd rebel against it. And then as soon as you left the room, she went back to being all
You know what? Who knows? Yeah. Who knows? You know what? And I've never, ever, 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 ever played that angle.
Yeah, maybe she was like, I'm gonna.
Now,
kind of like a drill sergeant in the Marines, you push them.
What I know is that she wasn't. But yeah. I love the positive spin that you've put on it. But she's, I know, like, for a fact that, like, she wasn't.
How long did you work with her?
Only 3 years.
Oh, only 3 years.
Because she scared me.
And so 3 years of torturing you and those children, just so one day you would turn into Lisa Murphy.
Oh, shut up.
She was like your what's that Ninja Turtle rat name?
I don't know.
You know, the Ninja Turtle rat. The
yeah.
Well, we're so old. Master Splinter. She was like your Master Splinter.
Quiet, and it will come.
Well, I have said, and in the books I've written it, so it's you know, not a big secret, that I'm glad that I got paired up with her the first 3 years that I was teaching, because I learned very quickly the kind of teacher that I didn't want to be. So while, you know, and maybe this does sound patty on the backy, but I didn't have a lot of shit that I had to unlearn. I had to just reconnect with what I got as a child and knew that I could still... Wait, you got that smirk on your face.
No, this is...
What?
Stop looking at him.
I know, right?
I'm going to whisper something to one of our listeners. Hey, Heather. Maybe she's your Poopy Face lady.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Keep taking notes.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, back to the podcast.
Okay. Yeah, 100%, actually. Wow. So I didn't have to undo a lot of stuff, but I mean, I've had a long road of rethinking and unthinking and undoing and getting out of habits and stuff like that. But I think sometimes about people who 15 years into their teaching, 10 years into their teaching, they read a book and they're like, oh my God.
Yeah.
10 years of undoing... That's a lot probably harder than 3 years of undoing.
Yeah.
And I'm well aware of that.
And if you would have turned into a less experienced version of you sooner and then ended up working with her, you might have killed her. You might have, like, stabbed her in the neck with the sharp end of a paintbrush or something.
Oh, no. Paintbrushes only came out on Wednesdays, so it probably wasn't an option.
Strangle her with her whistle?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Yes.
Wow.
Oh, I can still see her. Anyway. Wow.
And so the takeaway for me of that story is that if you want to get more focused on structure than control, you need to work with somebody that makes you miserable for 3 years and then...
No. You need to be going out to workshops, trainings, conferences, reading books, talking to people, and broadening your horizon and understanding. The reason, it was total ZPD, and that happened even before I even knew what that meant. Mm-hmm. Cindy showed up, and I was ready to be stretched out, and she saw that. And once the student is ready, the teacher will appear. And she did. And it was awesome. And what ended up being funny was that she was already at that point in her own journey of where she was rocking the boat a little bit. She was asking those kinds of questions. What was interesting was that at this particular school, she would ask the questions and would get in trouble by admin. And I would actually implement the practice, and I never got into trouble. And it became like a little joke. Like, if Cindy pushed verbally, you know, they'd be like, no, 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 no. But I would just start doing it. And nobody ever said anything. She was an awesome mentor. It was.
And so for our listeners who are maybe at the point in their journey that they are ready to become their own version of Cindy, what are the What are the tips we offer?
Well, look what Cindy did. Cindy didn't know me from Adam. I didn't know her from Adam, and she walked in and called me out right there in front of the children in a professional way. Mm-hmm. But she questioned my practice, and I was ready to hear it. What are you doing? I mean, she straight up asked, what are you doing? Why are you? They're three. Why are you making them line up in a line? And I had no answer. And that's when I realized that something had to change. And I've incorporated a lot of that now with the language I use with the people that I interact with. What are you doing? Why are you doing it? And who is it for? And if you don't have an answer, you're not allowed to keep doing it.
So it's about asking pertinent questions in a professional way.
And being able to maybe kind of push a little bit. To challenge a little bit, yeah. Which is, I think, where our profession, we're not good at that. We see people engaged in what we might call, not poor practice in that you're not doing it well. It's just that you're not engaged in best practice. But instead of calling them out directly on it, we just don't.
Yeah. How?
But we'll gossip about it.
How many years ago was that?
Oh, shit.
So 20 plus.
Yeah.
Okay. So in the world that, and now we're living in this world with social media the way it is, with everybody feeling judged and defensive. Could
that have happened now?
Could a 2017 version of Cindy get a? Would the response be the same, or would it end up? I mean,
going viral as some kind of bitch that came in and bossed me around. And yeah. Who the hell does she think she is? I have no idea. I have no idea. Because maybe social media savvy Cindy wouldn't have said anything for fear of some kind of online repercussion or anything like that.
Or just people are so wrapped up in their own. They're kind of invested in themselves to the point where any pushback puts them into a defensive mode right away. And I'm hearing Lisa didn't go into defensive mode. Lisa went into question myself mode. And I think now there's a lot of people, especially I sound so old. There are a lot of people coming into this profession who opt to defensive mode instead of question myself mode because it's the easier of the options. And maybe I'm a dick for thinking that.
Well, no, because we've joked and I'm going to get a letter for what I'm about to say, but the pacification of America, right? And that we've become wimpy and we've become so fragile that valid feedback is seen as some kind of a reflection, a threat on who we are as people, and really it might be honest to goodness constructive feedback that might be allowing us to do a better job, but we'll take it too personally.
Yeah, I mean, a couple weeks ago, I posted an article on my Explorations Early Learning Facebook page that kind of questioned the structure. I mean, we've got this 100-year-old factory model school system that could use updating, and there were people pissed off because it was an attack on teachers. It wasn't. It was questioning the structure and the way we do things, and people take it as a personal attack. And living in that world, and I know I've drug us off topic, but that's kind of the structure of the show.
But do you think, and I'm looking back to the six things of Mildred's stages of play, and I'm wondering, not to look to put it in a formula or encapsulate it, but is there then, does this go back? Is there room for us to say, it's because you didn't get practice here that now as an adult, this is so hard for you? I mean, I'm not looking for an answer, I'm just saying my brain is thinking that if you don't get certain needs met when you're little, that's going to manifest itself as an adult, whether you realize it or not. If you didn't ever get any time on the playground to have some kid not bully you, that's not what I'm saying, but to have those kind of altercations or that like day-to-day
scenarios and stuff when you're a kid.
If you don't get it, then you don't know how to work it when you get older.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, and if and I talk about this a lot in the rough and tumble sessions I do. If you grow up not engaging in rough and tumble play and large body play, and then you have somebody touch you on the playground when you're nine, it becomes a bully situation instead of a situation that you could have dealt with if you would have had those.
The practice.
And I, Jeff, point to the research that supports that. I don't have any, but
there is, and it talks about how, anyway, it doesn't matter. But they talk about kids who have this like completely irrational response to things that were really honestly just accidents.
Because
they never hung out with other kids, or they weren't on the yard, and they weren't engaged in body-to-body play.
Yeah. Well, we
know it exists.
We've kind of drug off topic, but that's kind of the structure of the show. So you're used to it if you've listened to more than one episode.
See, and the control, to bring it back a little bit, control would be that one of us sitting at the table right now was actually potentially bordering on a panic attack, being like, this is not the topic. I'm going to do everything to bring it back to the topic, even though what's unfolding is just as valid.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just that ebb and flow of structure.
Yeah, you were still in the fence area. You guys were
We were
fine.
Still in the fence.
Yeah, yeah.
We didn't need to get zapped.
Nope.
I want to throw something else in here.
Of course.
When's this episode going to air? This episode is going to air.
Spring break?
This episode is going to air right. Okay.
April.
February. So here's the deal. The end of February, a week, 10 days after this episode, and a week after this episode airs, we're supposed to be doing an UnCon in Australia. And at this moment, we're recording this about 3 months before that. There is some lag in registration and the
powers that be,
the inspired EC people that are trying to pull this thing together, are hearing from providers who have looked at going that they feel they need more structure as adults, and what their
calling structure is potentially control.
They're kind of wanting more control. Because that's what they're used to.
That's what I would say.
And so I'm really interested.
So we're gonna start the keynote at 9, yeah. And we're gonna have snack at 10:30.
Yeah, and
you can use the restrooms then too. So be back here in 15 minutes. Go.
And so I guess if you're used to being controlling in the classroom. Or you're used to being controlled.
Controlled. If you're used to being controlled as an adult, it's more familiar.
It's what you're comfortable with,
yes,
and then when
which doesn't mean it's what's best or appropriate. It's what's comfortable.
And when the opportunity for a different structure appears, you don't.
It's not familiar.
And again, it goes into the whole fear and lizard brain stuff that we've talked about before with Seth Godin and Stephen Pressfield. Oh, I got it right
Look
that time.
Look at you.
Any more on this?
Was that a long-winded register for UnCon in Australia?
Well, no. It's too late now. If you're just hearing this, it's either too late to register or it's been canceled because nobody felt safe enough or felt ready to give up their need for being controlled to come in.
But I think sometimes people don't realize that that's a need until they show up in the space.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so, I mean, yeah, I applaud them. And the other thing is that if there's people that feel that they need that, I don't want them rolling in to someplace where they're going to be completely miserable too. So you got to get comfortable with it. And that's this whole process. You got to get comfortable with yourself.
Or to become comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I think it's dinner time.
There we go.
There we go.
Sounds good.
It's time to put chili in my belly. hey, people, as we've been recording these last episodes, the smell of this chili that's been simmering for about 3 hours has been working its way up the stairs into the studio from the kitchen. And first it was on the first landing, and then it came up to the second landing, and then it made it all the way up to the hallway leading to upstairs studio. It's going
to
be so delicious, and you don't get any because that's not the way podcasts work. Hey, thanks for listening. Back soon with another episode. Bye-bye.
Bye.
See ya.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production.
Oh.
Hey, Jeff here. If you like the podcast, you might dig this. Dan Hodgins is going to join Lisa Murphy and I for 3 gigs in 2018. We're going to be in Portland, Oregon, Indianapolis, Indiana, and Madison, Wisconsin. We're calling it the Talking Play Tour because that's what we're going to be doing, talk and play. You can learn more at playvolutionhq.com/events. Hope to see you there.